Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care.
Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kim.
And I'm Kara.
And we tried to intro this earlier, but I slipped into my Valley Girl.
My voice. And this is the retake of the episode that shall not be posted, that would not, it simply would not be edited. It would not comply.
If The Audacity were an episode, that would be the one. And Let me just tell you, it impacted my every mood for an entire week. And that's not an overstatement. And I knew at some point I was like, I am angry and short and just not relaxing, not enjoying. We were on a friggin', yes, work trip, but we love doing them. And I couldn't relax because this is just in the back of my mind. And I had thought, okay, I can knock this out. You know, I say hyperfixate, but really this is, I guess, how people just focus is what you call. When I edit, though, I get in that groove and then I can focus and I can knock it out, get it done, and it's great. And this one just, like, the hits kept coming. There was no getting around it. There was no making it sound. You wouldn't have enjoyed the really great content and conversation.
Yeah, we were on it.
Because you would have been so distracted by what it sounded like. And the fact that I was having to go back in and take each, like, sentence that we would say and line them up manually. I'm like, you know what? This is above my pay grade.
So, for quick explanation for the people who maybe didn't see it on Instagram or Patreon, basically when we record podcasts, when anyone records podcasts, more or less, it records audio on separate channels. Basically, it records my audio, it records Kim's audio, and then we can download them separate, overlap them, whatever. But for some reason, when we recorded this episode, I had my audio. Kim's audio bled into my audio, but then she also had a mysterious third audio.
I don't even know how that happens.
I don't know either. And so it was, and everything is off. Like, I pulled a clip from it today, and it took me pulling about 3 minutes of video to get about 30 seconds of audio video that lined up. So that should give you an idea of what Kim's been dealing with. I only dealt with 30 seconds, actually, but it took 3 minutes of content pulling, and it took me at least 30 minutes to make everything line up. So,
and of course, it was the one episode where we're like, let's just keep going. This will be a 90-minute one.
It was so good, but
it was so great. You could imagine.
We will talk. We'll kind of give you the rundown of the things that we talked about. But one of the things that we did talk about right at the top of the hour, that if you're watching on Patreon, you will have already noticed something different about Kim.
That's right. Please peep
her hyperfixation.
Okay, this is not focus. This was hyperfixation. One by one.
Used to look like mine for people that are listening to audio. They're just boring black headphones.
They're bedazzled.
Kim's are not. Kim's look like the scales of a beautiful iridescent dragon creature.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, I think so too. They're like Schwartzky crystals, all different sizes, and they appear clear, but they also give off a very fuchsia tone when she moves her head. So they're very beautiful and very her.
By Schwartzky, Samsonite. You mean Amazon, and it's like the bejewel things. And I sat there just inhaling like the B7000 glue while I'm doing this one by one. And it ended up, there's over 10,000 these teeny tiny individual things.
I'm gonna place each one of those one by one.
One by one.
Yeah. So she said to me, well, I can't really wear earrings whenever we're recording because my headphones. So this is her flair. Meanwhile, I'm over here with my black headphones.
It is my piece of flair. On that note, too, I can't wear earrings. And yet, right before this, I decided to just, I'm going to re-pierce my ear because
I did a really dumb thing, let me tell you. And she's like, do you see this? And shows me her earring. And she's like, I said, did you re-pierce it? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, I don't think that's dumb. I've already done the same thing.
And I used my daughter's earring. If those longtime listeners, first-time callers, will remember, my daughter got her ear pierced, her ears, multiple, pierced at the American Girl doll store last season. I talked about it. But you know how the ones that they pierce with have to have like a sharp,
yeah,
to get through the cartilage. And so it's odd, like the holes been there. I think I got them done in middle school, maybe sixth grade or something. These are my third holes. And I ended up at that one time I had 13 in my ears. I don't know. I was trying to figure out who I was. It's going through a phase.
Sounds fun.
Uh-huh. And so it's basically there. I just needed to like push through the end of it. And
I don't feel like they ever really heal, which is what I was telling Kim, because I had my cartilage pierced when I was in college and I took it out not long after college, quite like my belly button. I got that pierced when I was in high school. Yep. Never really took it out. If I took an earring and just kind of like kept at it for long enough, I could get something through there.
I did a few weeks ago. Like, and mine just closed.
Yeah. You got to get the stuff out of there.
Okay. Disgusting. But also, yes, if you're not cleaning it out, it's building up. And I just, like, you all need to know this.
Listen, I caught myself last night. This is what I do. I think about things. And it's like, if I feel a bump on my skin, I physically cannot stop picking it, right? And so, yeah, same. Same. So I felt on the back of my ear last night and I was like, ooh, something's there. And I was just pick. And I was like, I am going to make, it was like right before bedtime. I was like, I'm going to bleed all over my sheets if I don't stop. I made myself stop. This has never happened. I was like hyper fixated. I was like, pick. It stopped before it was gone, before it was smooth. But the same thing happens with my belly button. I'll think about it and I'm like, I must get the things out of my belly button. And Joe will be like, stop it. That's disgusting. I physically cannot. Like, now that I've thought about it, I have to do it.
This is actually making my stomach kind of turn.
Kim already said before we started that she felt nauseous.
Yeah.
That was not on the recording.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was going to tell you. It's like the kind of nauseous, which, by the way, let's preface this, in no way, shape, or form will I ever be pregnant again. But it's like that morning sickness nausea that just, like, it'll go away. And it already kind of is.
Mine didn't.
Yours didn't. And then there's a baby.
Oh, the baby was fun.
But when we were in North Carolina last week, Mike and I gave the joint presentation that we love doing to the Prosecutors Association there. And I did the first day. We never break it up like this. We always tell it all at once. And I did the first session. It was like the kickoff intro to this. And the whole training is focused on how to present your sexual assault case to a jury, right? Right up my alley. I started by outlining background, the crime itself, and the investigation. So I had like an hour or so. And I went really into setting that scene for here's what you do. Here's how you start by believing. Keep that in mind as you hear from other speakers throughout these 2 days. And then I sat down and Mike's in the back and such. And I had pointed him out in the back like, hey, we're going to be talking tomorrow. But nobody knows we're married at this point. Brief aside. I sat down next to him and we're listening. And the next gal who I talked to afterwards, and I would love to have her on here because she was an absolute badass. But she's presenting this information that I'm geeking out on because it's all of the psychology parts of it. And all of a sudden, like, I burped. Like, not a, I know, not, and you know, like, not a kind of, it was like, I caught it and I looked at Mike wide eyed. He's like, I gotta go. Ran out the back. Thankfully, I'm sitting at the back and I didn't even make it around the corner to the bathroom. I grabbed the friggin' trash can that's next to the coffee and started like,
what?
Totally lost my breakfast. I hadn't eaten a whole lot. I never drink coffee like I do here when I'm traveling because I want my, like, I just want my coffee mate. I don't want something super sugary. I don't want any of that stuff. I just want my normal coffee mate and black coffee. And I lost my cookies. And then I went all the way to the bathroom and I was like, oh my gosh. And then I was done and it was fine. Just like, I don't know if you had that morning sickness where yak and then you're good.
Oh, I was never. Like,
we got to go because not only do I need to brush my teeth, but without fail, I will always mom life dribble. Sneezing fits, coughing fits, and puking. Enjoy.
Well, I mean, we're just like starting this out on the gross note.
This is not at all what we were thinking. Oh, wait. Okay. So before I move too far on, we presented the second day, but nobody knew that we were married and we didn't want to ruin it because he presents as Michael Rourke and I always do anything like this related advocacy is just Kimberly Corbin. The end of our presentation is when we say, oh, and by the way, I have a TikTok video that I had made long ago and show. So we were trying to be really cognizant of that to not freak people out if they see us around the hotel grounds, like holding hands or something like that. So it was almost like, pretend that we're not like PDA. And then we drop that and everybody's coming up. They're like, oh, we knew. And one gal tells my, I told my friend that if they are not together, then they are mighty cozy. It's like, okay, so we're not actually that good at hiding it. Cool.
I think my favorite was I called Kim about something. I FaceTimed her and she's like at the regional airport and she's like, oh my God, there's one gate and one plane and we were the first people here. And so she's like loving this regional airport life. And while she's there, like the waitress, you know, comes up and gives her a drink. She's like, here you go, baby. And Kim's just like, oh my God. And I was like, yeah, welcome to the South.
I know, I like, love it so much.
Anyone who is like, they could be 6 months older than you, but they're serving you and they're going to be like, here you go, baby.
I got called sugar. I was like, oh, thank you. I love it here.
Yeah, that is the way it is here. But then, you know, we also have some crazy bumper stickers and opinions, but we will not speak of those. We don't need to get political.
We had a fun little group chat of me, Kara, and then Mike and Joe on there. And I remember you or him maybe saying that you liked Bojangles and we were driving by these because we don't have them in Colorado. And I said Joe in the group chat, I was like, hey, isn't that that place that you like? And he sends us a voice message as Mike and I are driving. He goes, it's pronounced Bojangles.
Yes, Bojangles.
Bojangles, excuse me. Yes. That's all we said the whole time we were there. Bojangles.
Yes, the boys call it that as well now. They're like, Bojangles. They don't even eat there, but that's what it's called.
Yep.
Much like Target, Target, you know, you gotta have these like little nicer names for things.
Get it.
Okay. So the other thing that I was thinking of earlier when we were talking about like right before we started and we were talking about like cultural appropriation and stuff. And I was like, you know, this is how I know that my humor actually is pretty dark is I was watching this video, you know, Allison Cooch. You don't like Isaac Rochelle. He's like an NFL football player and everybody thinks that his last name is Cooch. C-U-C-H. Okay. Anyway, some of the people that are listening, they're on TikTok, will know. And so she's making a video. She's opening a PR package. And she's like, oh, it's from Anthropology. I don't even know what's in here. And so she pulls out this like garment bag. And she's like, I promise this is not, I can't remember what she said. I promise this is not a blank or a body bag. And she's like, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that. This is just too... I don't need to be doing this today. This is too dark. And she like turns it off. And I was like,
excuse me. Now that
she say,
I was just getting interested.
I was like, oh, body bag. I was like, oh, some people think that's dark. Okay. I was like, it like didn't even faze me. I was just like listening. I was like, I want to see what's in her bag. And I was like, why is she putting it up? Why is she ending the video? I don't understand. I was like, oh, that's dark for a lot of people.
Yes. Also, before we go too much further into things that we already talked about, here's something that we didn't before. I can't remember if I sent you this or not, but it was a linguist, like a master's doctorate level linguist, explaining how Taylor Swift and their Swifty language is actually something, and I can't remember the exact name of it, but basically when there's any kind of fandom or group of people, so even in cults, or extreme religious movements, or like, take for instance, your sports moms, your diehard sports families that maybe they travel everywhere for hockey or something like that. Okay, so a group that is really, really in it will create their own terms. They have their own ways to talk about this. And he's
colloquialisms.
Correct. He's talking about it as Swifties have all of these things that they'll say that maybe have to do with lyrics or whatever. So he was using that as an example. But when they transcend into the general public and everyone's using them, such as they're in my blank era, or it's me, hi, I'm the problem. where it's no longer just talking about Swifties or Taylor Swift or Swifties saying it. They're using it in a lot of different ways that I can't remember the exact name of it. I'll find it. But that this is like a phenomenon that linguists will look at. And that got me thinking as I was talking about it with another survivor. I was like, hey, that's totally what we do. All of us, mm-hmm. when we talk about the look that we give each other, you can tell, because he's also saying, you know, you can tell when it's used in a way that is not genuine, where somebody's taking or appropriating that language and it's not from somebody who's in the quote unquote in group or somebody who lives this. They're using it in a way that is disingenuous. And you can see that. You can tell when somebody is using survivor language, therapy language, whatever it might be, and it is not something that they are entrenched in.
It's genuine to them. It's disingenuous.
Exactly. And it just made me think of the way that you and I talk about things and we don't think twice about it. But if somebody else were to say it in a way that we pick up on, like your flags go off. I don't know how to explain that, but... Somebody's not being genuine, and the same could be said of, you know, start by believing or anybody that's responding to somebody else in trauma. You can tell when they're not being genuine.
Yeah, totally. That's interesting. It makes me think of that. You posted something recently also about people who weaponize therapy talk and how our society is over generalizing, which this is not a new thing.
No,
this is tale as old as time. But our society now, because therapy is more commonplace, has begun over generalizing therapy terms, and they're losing their impact. Everyone's triggered, and it's like, no, you're not actually triggered. You might be activated, but it's not the same thing. Or people, you know, everyone has PTSD and everyone is depressed and everyone has anxiety. Everyone has ADHD. It's like, I mean, I think everyone does probably. I think most people at this point have a little bit of ADHD. And I wonder, is it just the next form of like, maybe it's just the people that I'm around. But I'm like, when I meet a neurotypical person, I'm like, how does your brain work? Like, neurotypical people are a mystery to me.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's an interesting thing to think about when we consider our language, which is always something that we are trying to learn and grow and be cognizant of, which is a perfect segue into our next topic. But, you know, one of the things that it's important to keep in mind, and one of the things that you said from the podcast episode that shall not air, the one who shall not be named, is when we know better, we do better. So I think it's always important for us to be growing and striving and taking in new information and being willing to change, because the world is always changing. Situations are changing, and you should always be able to take in someone else's opinion or new information and not be so black and white, not be so rigid.
Yep. Be open to receiving that new information and open to changing your opinion when you have that information. That has long been a huge pet peeve of mine, is when that language or a label is weaponized. And I was more thinking of it from folks who will see something and then they're labeling other people in a way that dilutes. The term narcissist is really what pops up, because it's good that people are learning about this, but in reality, if you look at the statistics of how many people are actually narcissists, it's a very, very small percentage of the population. Like, the dude that you dated is not a narcissist. He was just a dick, and he was a dick to you. And that's okay. You can say he was acting like a narcissist, or there's a lot of different things. And I don't know why that has just always ticked me off. But until you're in a really traumatic situation, I remember my cousin, who I adore and look up to, at one point she was spending a lot of money on something, and this is years and years ago, and she said, oh my God, I'm about to have a panic attack. But this is when I was at the height of not being able to control my panic attacks, and it set me off in such a big way. And I didn't, like, she sat with me while I processed it and everything, and it wasn't like I was blaming her, but it made me so mad. And it just turns you on to how many times that kind of language is used. And it's not an effort to police that type of language, but simply to make you more aware. And the big one that I've come across recently is the term spaz, where I had no idea. I was using that word all the time. I would say something like, oh, I spazzed out. When in reality, there's a lot of folks who are maybe on a spectrum or have, oh my gosh, what's the word I'm looking for? Tics and...
Tourette's.
Tourette's, yes. Folks who have Tourette's or on a Tourette's style spectrum can take offense to that. I had no idea. No clue at all. I was using it in like a self-deprecating way. It's like, oop, all right, now I know better. And yeah, that would actually suck to say. And it's the same thing. Like, I saw Jen Hatmaker really, really graciously accept feedback when she said something about, this is my manic phase about packing or something. And the reason I can tell her community that she has built on her social media platforms is so genuine is because they gently reminded her. They gently reminded her, hey, we know that you are a big person who supports mental health. And so we just want to let you know that kind of language isn't necessarily helpful. And I point that out. Hey, look, a real segue. Because we had a follower, a listener who reached out to us in the same way after our Olympics episode. And I cannot be more thankful that you all feel comfortable doing this because same thing. When we know better, we can do better. And pointed out the issues with us talking about the Dutch volleyball player who's a convicted rapist, damning him in one sentence, and then talking about how much we love Snoop Dogg in another one. And I had no idea about the things that she pointed out to us and sent us links, which was wonderful. And she literally was just letting us know, not
how dare you.
Yeah, exactly. She's not taking offense, but
hey, I don't know if you noticed. Knew this, but would like to share this information. So we do want to address that.
Yes.
Because we were unaware. Not that ignorance is any excuse, but very often, I think many of us have a hard, I will speak for myself. I personally have a very, very hard time keeping up with anything in the media. And maybe that's out of a place of privilege. You can say whatever you want, but it is hard for me to keep up with the thing. I don't watch the news. I don't consume the news. I don't consume true crime. I don't have the wherewithal or the time, to be quite honest. I'm drowning most of the time. And so I very often miss these things. And so I am always happy to take in new information and gather information. But essentially, the gist of the Snoop Dogg situation, it's two parts. He was accused of sexual misconduct of some level leading up to his Super Bowl appearance. That charge was dropped, right?
Correct. The plaintiff, in this case, alleged victim or plaintiff dropped that suit.
Right. So we always will start by believing we don't know the situation. We don't know why that was dropped, whether it was, you know, I had cases that I worked to where I knew without a doubt something happened. And yet I could not take it to court. There was no evidence to prove that it happened. And so I had to close those cases because there was not enough evidence. The solicitor said, this is going to be really hard. I don't think you should make an arrest. So could it be something like that? Yes. Could she have recanted? Sure. Could she feel like she didn't want the publicity? Sure. There is a spectrum of reasons why people drop cases, but it doesn't mean that nothing happened. Yeah. So we do want to be sensitive to that.
Always reiterating the fact that just because someone is found not guilty does not mean that a crime or that something didn't happen. What it means is that they could not prove that the elements of the crime with which they were charged happened beyond a reasonable doubt. So I just want to make that very, very clear that it doesn't mean that nothing happened. And the same can go for different suits, NDAs. There's all kinds of outside pressures that can happen. One of the things that obviously my brain always goes back to is just how good Snoop Dogg's PR team must be to have people like us who live in this world. How is that completely erased from from either our memory or just like we have all of these things over the top of it layered on that he is now marketed as, you know, USA's fun uncle and like he's exciting to be around. And never mind the fact that he is directly quoted his own self quote. And I'm going to read this so that I do not get it incorrect. He is quoted as saying, "If I'm in a city where the Denver Broncos or the Nuggets play, I get a couple of their players to come hang out, pick and choose, and whichever one you like comes with a number. A lot of athletes bought pussy from me," Snoop said. There are many different ways that we can look at human trafficking, and that's what our wonderful listener had pointed out, that it doesn't always look the way that we think it does. We've heard that time and again on this podcast, and a lot of people aren't going to realize that they are a victim of human trafficking until they're in it. One of the things I liked that you said, Kara, is that's not damning sex work or those who are actively and consenting parties and being engaged in it.
Right. Because in the same vein as what we were saying about we don't know why this suit was dropped, we also don't know the situation, whether it's Snoop playing the connector for these sex workers, whether it is him serving as a layer of protection for people who are willingly entering into sex work, or whether those people are in fact being pimped and he's keeping profits or whatever. We don't know the situation, but we do want to explain and give some context for why we are diving into this topic, because it's not black and white. And I think that that is one thing that our current culture is really getting wrong a lot right now, is everything's black and white. And it really isn't. There's so many shades of gray. And one of the things I learned early on in my law enforcement career is that there are at least three sides to every story. There's one person's side, the other person's side, and then somewhere in between is the truth, because we view all of our experiences through our perception. And so we just want to make sure that we are sensitive to things that we may have missed and different people's perspectives and different people's life experiences. And we do want to share that information in case you were also unaware.
And I have to tell you, that was a huge gut check for me. It didn't feel good.
I know.
I'm like, oh, but I loved him. And that, this is where you get into, people are like, can you separate the art from the artist? I'm like, that, I don't want to have to, but now I do, because guess what? My principles about being for survivors are more important than my perception of some stranger on the internet. Like, yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, but it also gives us perspective into what families feel of accused people. Right?
Roll with that. Keep going.
Yeah. So we, as survivors, very often will hear, well, we didn't know he was like that. And I think that that can lend to people's disbelief as well of offenders committing alleged crimes, is they're like, but that's not the person I know. Well, of course it's not. It's kind of like, I was talking to a friend today and she was talking about having a conversation with someone. And she was like, I don't know, you might be a thief. And the person responded back with, I'm not a thief. I'm like, well, a thief is never going to be like, you got me, I steal stuff, right? Like, an offender is going to be like, oh, you got me, I assaulted that person, right? Like, people, they also probably don't see anything wrong a lot of the time, which is just like a whole other side. But, but it's like, we just got a piece of what often happens to loved ones and family members of the accused.
Right. Domestic violence offenders don't do it out in broad daylight. It's not an anger control issue. They can control it very, very well. Mm-hmm. It's that they know when they can drop that mask and commit those crimes, because they have already brought people into that level of control where they know that they're not going to crack and they're not going to get out and they're not going to ask for help. That's the level of control that they have to lay the groundwork for before anything physical ever happens. So jot that down.
Yeah. And then talking about, like, you just brought domestic violence into the headlines. And so I do want to circle back around to the thing that we covered on this other episode that I thought was a very important conversation. And we've actually gotten even more information since we recorded it about what's going on. The Colleen Hoover movie.
We segued. It's almost like we practiced and then...
I'm good at segues if you just give me a second.
I need to record the episode a second time and then I'm going to get my segues down pat. It's going to be great.
Yeah. It's because I'm always analyzing and looking for connections with things. So,
well, we did a live with Patreon and kind of did the same thing where we're bouncing all over and we're like, we need a segue sound, because if we're not going to segue, we just need a new topic and we need a sound for that. So if you have ideas.
Well, it's like I have one on my...
Probably that one. Fits the mood. Trauma.
Wait, I have two more options. Not that one. those are the options on my P4. That's all you got. I could probably see what else is on there later and report back.
Blah, blah, blah. Okay, Colleen Hoover, you suck. Next. No one should have given us these with buttons.
I've never actually used these before. First time for everything. I'm like, what is this red button do? I don't know. Let's mash it.
Don't push it. Don't push it. I don't want to push it.
That red button that's staring you in the eyeballs right beside you. So Kim made a video and it's her saying that she doesn't like Colleen Hoover. And we were talking about, we'll start with It Ends With Us, which is a movie that is out right now in the U.S. If anyone is not a U.S. listener, you may not be aware. It stars Blake Lively. She was also a producer.
Yeah.
And we are experiencing the downfall of Blake Lively, which pains Kimberly greatly. Yet again, we are eating our shoe. Does it pain you greatly?
I mean, if Taylor Swift is listening, then she didn't do that. Just in case I ever get the chance to meet her.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's because
that's literally the only reason. And I love Ryan Reynolds. And you've had the platform.
Yeah, like I've been watching all of his stuff with... the Wolverine and Deadpool movie. And I'm like, he seems so trauma informed and like, he seems like he's done a lot of therapy.
Oh, totally. But that's why I kept thinking as I'm looking at this and through again, the same lens as what we were just talking about, like her PR team did her dirty on this one. And
Or did they?
Right. Or did they just be like, okay, do your thing by all means.
Right. But also, we also have to view this through the lens of, is it just publicity?
I know.
Period. So here's the background. Okay. Colleen Hoover writes this book. We have a clip that we're going to circle back around to, but it's called It Ends With Us. Blake Lively decides she wants to make this movie. She's heavily involved in the production and all aspects of it. She's also the star. Now she's going on the press junket. And it is painful to watch. This book is about domestic violence. And she is talking about her floral dresses. And she is like making jokes. And she vehemently refuses to address the topic of domestic violence. When people flat out ask her to address it, she will not do it.
The one part, or I've seen one interview where she tries, and I'm thinking the best. Maybe it's just taken out of context. But then as I watched some of the interviews that are like not edited.
Ooh, it's bad. It's painful.
Well, and I should also point out when Colleen Hoover, who was the author of the book, had that book optioned for a movie, Justin Baldoni was put on as the director and producer, who has a really great reputation. He also runs, and I don't know how I missed this, the podcast and the account We Are Man Enough, which is like all about positive masculinity. And so I didn't realize that. I just knew that he had a good reputation on like TikTok, for instance. And to see the different press tours that they are leading.
Because they're doing separate ones, which everyone was wondering. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, what is going on here? Because you have, what's her face? Is it Pipe? Not, what's her name? The other gal that she's doing all the... I saw one interview where it was the two of them. And I was like, this hurts me to watch.
The one where she's with Parker Posey and they're being mean girls.
Yes.
Ooh, that hurt.
I was like, what is happening? It's so terrible to watch, guys. It's it's painful. Like it brings up those feelings of being in high school and like knowing that someone at the table next to you at lunch is talking about you.
Yes.
Can't do anything about it. It's mean girl stuff. And not in the cute mean girl movie way that we'd love. It's actual mean girl stuff. And then you have Justin Baldoni, who does like his own, like they are not talking at any of the appearances. And it's like something's going on here.
Well, and you have two PR teams then that are playing off of this, and I'm sure just laughing all the way to bank. But good press, bad press, it's press. And to see the contrast in what is being spoken about and how it's being addressed, we are just becoming so desensitized to the fact that this is supposed to be about domestic violence. And this is part of where I told Kara, I'm a lot more brought down to earth since I was on a fiery rant on the last one when we recorded this. But my whole problem with this is that when I read that book, it was recommended to me. You know who you are that recommended it. Oh my God, you have to read this. And I know you're listening. And I just want you to know that I hope there is a hair stuck to the back of your shirt that rubs the back of your arm and you cannot find it for days. That's what I want you to know. And I hated every single second of it. For many reasons. One, it just sucked. The whole story sucked. Number two, it is introducing domestic violence in a way that is romanticized. And all I could think of is, oh shit, this is Twilight all over again, where you have a whole generation, a group of people who are consuming this because her writing style, the actual style of it, while yes, I think it's a literary abortion, is easy to read and so easy that you get through it in a quick amount of time. And it's very like, oh, I'm going to go on to the next one.
It's like you're not even processing what you're reading.
Exactly. I said
subconscious programming.
Yes. And so you're reading through it and then it's like, oh shit, what I just read was literally excusing domestic violence. And then you get to the author's note. And I wrote this down and I read it to make sure that we get it correct. But the author's note at the end of the book, she is talking about the fact that she is a child of a domestic violence relationship. She talks about her father and her mother, where her mom divorced her dad before she was three. And she says that every memory beyond that of her dad was a good one, that he never lost his temper with Colleen or her sisters, despite having done so on numerous occasions with her mother. And when I read that, I'm like, this makes more sense. This is someone who is trying to humanize an abuser. And whether it's trying to write it in her own mind or what, it's someone who is seriously misguided in seeing that just because the domestic violence didn't extend to her as physically, it still impacts kids. It still impacts that entire family dynamic. Just because they didn't hurt you doesn't mean that they didn't hurt someone else. And I got what it was on face value, but it was missing something. And for the longest time, I could not put my finger on it as to why I disliked it so much. But it is because this is domestic violence 101 for young kids who don't know any better, or even for adults who aren't steeped in this culture of advocacy or standing up for yourself. There's so many people that would just read through this and be like, see, it's fine because at the end she says that we shouldn't be together. And he says, okay. I had this conversation with my mom a couple days ago. Bullshit. What abuser do you know that's just like, you're right. Let's break up. And I get, there's a whole other second book. Don't bother. Don't bother. I just was so off put by all of it. And it shouldn't be banned. It should be studied and looked at and talked about in a way that doesn't blow smoke up your ass. So I do think that it's important, but damn, man, I had my hair on fire after that one. I have given her books a chance, and I also did not like Verity. That was the other one that people are like, oh, it's good, it's not her usual.
Yeah, so that's the one we talked about it too. I've not read any of Colleen Hoover's books except Verity, because reading the premise of all of her books, I'm like, this is not my jam.
Mm-mm.
I generally will read a, like, not a whodunit necessarily, but like a a twisty thriller.
Ooh, I love those.
Right. I think the best one I read was the Geneva Rose one. Did you read that?
But I did just read None of This is Real, or None of This is True. That was a good one. I enjoyed.
Okay. I have heard that one's good too.
I kind of had it sort of worked out in my mind, but at the same time.
The Perfect Marriage is the one that she went. She this is where she came to popularity. The Perfect Marriage. Cause I was a psychological thriller. What they call them. So it's what was the other one? They made a movie and Ben Affleck was in it.
Gone Girl.
Yeah. That kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
There was the other one, something about the Bones and Mark Wahlberg starred in it.
I don't know. I mean, I think The Bone Collector. Oh, and Kiss the Girls.
I never read that.
I've never read it. I've seen the movie many, many times. And those are the kinds that I...
The Lovely Bones.
Oh, that's a whole other episode, dude.
Yeah. So I don't remember much about it, but I just remember reading it and I was like, whoa. So, mm-hmm. Books like that. It's a whole... And so that's a genre that I know I can enjoy when I'm in the right mindset. For the most part, I read garbage.
I am currently binging garbage. Hot trash.
Yeah, romantasy.
I love that.
Romance. I want to read about dragons and romance. Anyway, so I know that I can be in that genre. So Verity was marketed to me as something that would be outside of Colleen Hoover's norm, but more in that psychological thriller. It really made me I wasn't full. We talked about it and I had to dissect again what my experience was with it after we talked, because I read books and I'm in them and then they're immediately out of my brain and I immediately forget them. So I had to sit on it for a minute and remind myself of what my experience was with that book. And I, for the most part, knew what was happening, but there were a couple of elements that caught me by surprise. Books never really catch me by surprise. I pretty much always know what's going to happen, even psychological thrillers. So that was something I was hanging on, because I was I need all of these loose ends to be tied up. I need to know how all of these things happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really uncomfortable the whole time I read it, to be honest.
Yeah. That was when I had figured out.
It deals a lot with stuff with kids. And I might have even read it when I was pregnant. Honestly,
I think you did, actually, now that I'm...
And so it was pretty uncomfy. I would not really recommend.
Yeah.
Yeah. On that note, if you do want a lighthearted read, one of the things we talked about is I told Kim she needs to read the Janet Ivanovich books. They're one for the money. They're numbered. And Sue Grafton. Which Sue Grafton's books start in the 80s. And those are the A's for Alibi. So they go through the alphabet. Those are a good lighthearted. I know I can always pick those up and read them and enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
And we also talked about, I do want to circle back around to this one specifically, the Sarah J. Maas books. Because when you think of romanticy, most people, the first thing they're going to think of is A Court of Thorns and Roses. That's going to be... ACOTAR is going to be the first thing that pops into people's minds. And ACOTAR is fine. Kim prefers Crescent City. That's her favorite. My favorite is A Throne of Glass of all the series. But one of the things that I realized that she does very, very well is while these characters experience traumatic events, the supporting characters, the people that are around these characters, say these things and act in ways that are so trauma-informed that I find myself in many of her books underlining and highlighting passages to then go and share on my social media, because they are so well written.
It is consent for the female gaze. The way that she builds and outlines these characters is that, yes, all of these awful things can happen. And it's, again, the least interesting part about them. And she's writing female heroines in a way that doesn't point out or make it a big deal that it's a female. It's just, I wrote them strong because they're strong. and the way that she has relationships worked in there. I felt myself take a deep breath after even that first book that is dealing with themes of sexual assault, imprisonment, massive trauma, but in a way that doesn't scar the reader. It makes them understand the character and root for them. But every single time that I'm reading through these, I'm like, I can relax because I know Sarah J. Maas has her back. And I'm not going to be traumatized by what I'm reading. And it just made it so much more enjoyable. I loved those. I wish I could read them again for the first time.
I know.
So much.
Yeah. Isn't that fun? Whenever my husband just started a book series, he just got the first one on Audible. I don't remember what it is, but he was like, oh my God, there's like 8 of these books. And I was like, is that not the best feeling? Okay. Like when I read Throne of Glass, I got all of the Throne of Glass books in one.
Oh, Kindle. Yeah. I remember you said that.
And I just straight shotgunned them, just like one back to back to back. And I was reading it for, you know, like a couple months because it's a lot of words. It's a lot of books. It's so good. It's the best feeling.
I'm in the middle of a series of 8 right now, and I don't even want to say the name out loud because when I
love that.
Just from your local Twilight girly all grown up. But now, like, this one is very similar. At least in the first book, I was like, is this fan fiction? I'm not mad. I just want to know. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. But, like, imagine Twilight with consent themes.
I'm not even going to tell you most of the stuff I've read because I'm like, why am I reading this?
Well, and I put it on my Goodreads and then I'm like, I don't want people to see this. They shouldn't know this. Now. It's like my diary.
Yeah, I definitely have plenty of books like that. I'm currently finishing my series like that where I'm like, why have I stuck through this?
I text my niece because she's like, I am not ever reading this. I was like, well, you know, right now they're like heroin. I know they're bad for me. And yet, I can't help but want to keep reading.
Oh, my God. It reminds me of course, like, I don't even want to talk about the politics of this, but Theo Vaughn had Donald Trump on his podcast that he does. And there's this moment where Theo Vaughn is, I've only seen, like, the clips of it. I haven't watched the whole thing or anything, but it's, like, Theo Vaughn talking about how he used to do a lot of cocaine. And he's like, yeah, man. He's like, yeah, homie, cocaine will make you be your own street lamp. You'll be sitting on your porch thinking you're an owl. And Donald Trump's like, so did you like that feeling? And he's like, no. And he's like, then why would you do it? He's like, I wouldn't. He's like, I wouldn't do it now. He's like, that's why I stopped. But it's like the same thing where you're like, I don't know. I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm here.
It says, I don't know who this guy is.
Theo Vaughn?
Uh-uh.
Oh, see, Kim, I can tell you've been off of the line a lot in the last year because he's really come to popularity in the last year. You know the sound that's like, if there was a wishing well and it said vapes in here.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You in there, that's him that's saying that. Or like the other one where it's like, do you ever feel like the wind is telling you something?
Oh,
he's like, I just wish you would stop saying dumb shit. That's him too.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
He's just really, he's like from Louisiana. He says the most ridiculous stuff, but he's like very like Americana in a lot of ways, and he is what he is. I don't know.
Fun fact for those of you that don't know, I don't listen to podcasts.
No, me either.
I listen to the daily.
I listen sometimes to the One Tree Hill one. I stopped. I like was shotgunning One Tree Hill, rewatching it, and I was listening to the Drama Queens podcast, which is the 3 primary female stars, and it's just like fun little girl party.
Yeah. I guess I'm listening more to romanticy.
Yeah.
Hot trash than
podcasts, which
that says for all of you. Blind leading the blind here.
I think, okay, so I do have a segue.
Blah, blah, blah. Push the button.
My God, what have we done to ourselves? So we do need one that's like a drum roll.
Something or just squirrel.
I'm gonna go through as soon as we end this. I'm gonna go through they're on my P4 and I'm gonna find them. But the One Tree Hill podcast appeals to me, and I think I'm pretty sure I've talked about it in another episode.
I think you have, yeah,
yeah, because they are girls' girls, which was another thing that we discussed, is this topic of being a girl's girl. Because I think this is really interesting because I wasn't a girl's girl. Kim wasn't a girl's girl. And I think that is something that we are finding in the survivor community, and we are very much finding as adults, is like, I think I posted a reel recently, and it's like, nobody builds you up like a woman who's also been through some shit.
Yeah.
And that was a clip from a podcast, I'm pretty sure. And it's like this journey of becoming a girl's girl and what it looks like.
I liked this conversation that we had, because this is something that I've been ruminating on for a really long time, is that I haven't always been a girl's girl. And it sits with me and it doesn't feel good. But we are also being raised in, you know, a 2000s era, 90s, 2000s, where, and historically, women have always been pitted against each other. Because look what happens when women do band together. You flip history books and you make massive sweeping changes in a way that makes other people really uncomfortable. So why wouldn't we want to pit women, especially strong women, against each other? And so just thinking through all of those things that we are so intent, or it's brought back to, you need to do everything in your power to gain favor with men. Everything that you do has to relate back to them and their approval. And this isn't a commentary on men in general. This is a I hate to say it, but a patriarchy comment. Men are not the problem. It is that system that is the problem. And we are constantly fed bullshit that everything that we do has to appease that system, because also it's easier for us when we do that. And that can make us not make the best choices when right in front of us is somebody else who's experiencing the exact same thing. And if we wake up and say, oh shit, if we do this together, we can take anybody down. We can do things that, I'm sorry, that wasn't the right thing. Take anybody down, take any system down. Look at that. See, it's so ingrained. But we can do anything. And it's not as if we're going to run out of likes, of comments, of cheerleading, of hyping each other up, of connections to be made, of promotions. We're not going to run out of those things by supporting each other. And it has taken, I mean, even me, a long time to get there. And can I just say that it is the best part of having this access to social media now at our age, is knowing, oh my God, I can make a connection and hype another female up in a way that I wish could have happened before. And what we brought this back to is that being a girl's girl boils down to believing someone, to believing in someone, to believing in yourself. And being the ultimate girl's girl means you start by believing. You are believing survivors, because what happens when we believe each other the first time? We talk about this every single episode. We are empowering those survivors to go forward and ask for help, to report, to hold offenders accountable, to do all of these things that if you don't have other people hyping you up and telling you and supporting you at the very beginning, are you going to be able to get there? We don't know. Or is it going to take you a lot longer?
Yeah, I think it's just like all of the things we do. And it's that when you see women supporting women, you realize that there is space. It's like Kim said, there's plenty of likes. There's plenty of space for all of us.
Oh, there's one of the things, too, when we are talking about the introduction to domestic violence through that romanticized version, is I saw this video about a researcher who is talking about the way that girls are able to evaluate and examine their peer-to-peer relationships. And this is why being a girl's girl is so important. But the way that they are able to evaluate those gives you practice long before you ever enter an intimate relationship later on in life. That helps you with placing your boundaries, with setting those, with figuring out what you are and aren't comfortable with in a way that completely eliminates intimacy from the equation. And the better you are at setting those boundaries and getting what you need out of a friendship and making sure that you are not giving too much of yourself to somebody that's taking more, it's not always going to be 50-50. But if you can establish those boundaries and be a good friend to those that you have decided deserve that, it makes you better prepared for when you do enter romantic relationships later on in life, and helps build up that wall so that you will not be as susceptible to incidences of domestic violence later on. But that's hard because that's systematic, and that's something that we all have to play a role in. And hyping girls up, being a girl's girl, is a great way to do it.
You know, I'm not going to be right for everyone. I learned that in a very real, visceral way on social media recently. And that's okay, because there's plenty of space. There are hundreds of thousands of other people that I already know are my people because they got me. No matter what I do, they're going to hype me up. And I think that people see that and they go, oh, she's supporting other women. Maybe I should. It's one of the things that drives and motivates us. I do want to share something that's really amazing that has happened since the last time we recorded this episode.
Yeah.
So we talked about something that happened on TikTok to me recently, and I want to share the update. So I'll share the original story first. So I got on TikTok about a week and a half ago now, and I have been seeing steady gain in followers and content interaction and everything there. And I had about 714,000 followers. So nothing to sneeze at. That's fantastic. So I get on and I see that I have hundreds of comments since the last time I've checked, which is not necessarily normal for me. And so I was like, what the heck's going on? I go on and I see all of these people who are saying, I came from such and such's video. I have no idea who this person is. I go to their site. It's a large creator who has 14 million followers and tells stories with AI graphic animation. He tells shorter form stories, primarily true crime type stories, on this channel. He's told my story. And I now have this large influx of people. Now, I felt the need to address this large influx of people because anytime I get a large bump in followers or content interaction, I get, who are you? Can you do a story time? They ask all these questions. So I was like, let me just make one video to address all of it. So I get onto my video. That week, I had a major life-changing meeting that did not go well with our family. And I also had my first time that I threw out my back. But it was my upper back and my neck. So I thought that I had experienced something similar before. I have not, in fact, experienced anything like that. It's not a pinched nerve. I actually could not move. I was like I broke my neck. So I get on to make this video response. I was like, let me just do this video really quick. And I'm in pain and I've had an extremely stressful week. And so I start the video. You know, I saw that a lot of you are here from this creator, and I don't know who he is. He didn't reach out and ask, but if you're here, I'm glad you're here. And here's some information, my frequently asked questions, blah, blah, blah. People get on and they're like, why are you being so salty? Why are you angry at this creator? Why? Why are you so angry? And I was like, oh, much like other interviews I've done in the past, I could either fly by it and ignore it, or I can take this as an opportunity to inform and educate a whole new audience on what it means to produce ethical true crime. So of course, I chose to inform people on what it means to produce ethical true crime. And I said something to the effect of, I'm not mad at this person. I just want you to consider something. And if you're willing to take in new information, we're just like wrapping it all the way back around to the beginning. If you're willing to take in new information and possibly change your opinion and learn and grow, please feel free to listen. If that's not you, fine, carry on. And so I explained our stance on ethical true crime. Imagine you get onto social media and you see a stranger who is telling the story of the worst day of your life. And it doesn't matter how many people you've told. This is someone who did not reach out, who did not ask your opinion. They did not tag you. They're not doing monetization splits. It's not about money, but they are making money off of it. To date, he has probably conservatively made $20,000 from posting my story.
Which is higher than the first time we recorded this and you did the math in real time.
Correct. So I did it a couple days ago. And if he has shared, he shared on TikTok, Instagram. So he shared a screen grab of my TikTok, but he posted that same video on YouTube and Instagram. So there was no pointing towards my Instagram or my YouTube. So that being said, he did not effectively tag me. People are like, he tagged you. He did not. Regardless, he is conservatively made $20,000. And if that doesn't feel icky to you, maybe check what consent is and learn a little bit about exploitation. And then, of course, I get people that are doubling down. They're like, oh, you're just in it for the clout. You're just in it for the money. You're just in it for this and that and that. I'm like, bitch, please. Like, to which I said on the podcast and on a video, I don't want to be famous for being sexually assaulted. Get the fuck out of here. Like, who wants to be famous for that? Like, literally no one wants to be famous for something someone else did to them.
Can you name any of Bill Cosby's victims that came forward? No?
No, you can't.
Nope, you fucking
because
can't.
No one fucking knows. Because all anybody says is Bill Cosby. Mm-hmm. So, anyway. So, I'm like, first of all, no. Second of all, I've been on the cover of People magazine and done all of these other things with consent and participation. Like, yeah, there's a Lifetime movie out there. Guess who worked on that project from beginning to end? Yeah, there's a documentary. Guess who was an executive producer and got, like, they paid me for my story rights. Yeah, there's various articles you can go out there and find, but I wrote several. I was interviewed. I participated in those. And that's what consent is. Like, consent is not given once and it's fucking blanket. No, it exists for that single point of time and it can be withdrawn. So, like, it's a lesson in consent. And so I just kind of made one last video. Like, I'm going to put this to bed. I wasn't mad. If you think I was mad, maybe revisit it.
She was only giving side eye because she had to. She couldn't turn her head.
Exactly. So then I just continued with my regular content and I got some comments on some of the videos and I responded to those. And one of them was a woman saying, how do you deal with just not wanting to be in the world anymore? Essentially, do you ever have those moments and how do you deal with it? And I just took about 3 minutes. It's about a 3 minute long video that I made explaining to her, first and foremost, like, get help, but please know you're valuable, you're worthy. Other people's expectations don't define you. I think you matter. And if you're looking for some real world tips on how to remind yourself of how worthy and how wonderful the world is, here's some tips. And I woke up the day after I made that video, or a couple days after I made that video, to a video response from her. And I immediately sent it to Kim. And that's why I called you on the FaceTime. I was like, go watch this video.
Yep.
And now I remember. And she said, I just want you to know that you saved my life with your video. And she said, I'm getting help. I have a psychologist. I have a psychiatrist. But I am taking your advice. And I'm going to start thinking about the things that bring me joy and the things that make me happy. And I'm going to start doing those things again. And let me show you some of the things that make me happy. And then she makes, you know, this like 4 minute video of the things that are making her feel happy. And let me tell you, in the same way we had a gut check with the Snoop Dogg thing, I had a different kind of gut check. I was like, I don't need to be understood by all of these people on the internet who don't get me.
Yep.
I don't need to be understood by these people who don't understand consent. Kim and I have watched through the evolution of TikTok. We have watched people's opinions and perspectives on the ethics of true crime change. We have seen it happen. It is trending towards more ethical content, but the people who still don't get it don't matter. The people that matter are the people that send us messages. All of you that are listening who say, you saved my life. You changed how I processed and viewed my trauma. You helped me to unpack and unravel a new layer of healing. And at the end of the day, I don't want to be famous for what someone else did to me, but what I do want to be known for, I don't care about being famous. I want to be known for making people feel seen, feel heard, and feel like they can heal. That's it. Because I'm going to reuse a quote because it's so good and you will have seen it. Not everyone can relate to being kidnapped and assaulted by a serial killer. Not everyone can relate to Kim's story of someone breaking into their apartment and sexually assaulting them. Not everyone can relate to that, but every single person that is listening to this either has or will have a story of experiencing something really, really crappy and having to pick yourself up and decide what you're going to make from it. And that's why we do this. That's why.
And it's not to say that we do that alone. That choice is ours alone. But that's where we call in our support system. That's where we tap into videos exactly like what Kara is talking about. That's where we look for those outside sources of strength when we forget our own. And I loved that. As soon as I watched it, I'm like, all of the crap that you have been going through and screenshotting and trying to educate people over the last couple weeks, this is your one. You know, that's something that I said, and that was my impetus for releasing my name all the way back when I was 20, is that if it helps just one person not have to go through what I did, that's worth it.
Yep.
And to be reminded of those things is truly an honor. And when we see them like this in real time, that's why we do it. That is the whole reason.
Yeah. And I think I was getting people who were saying, oh, you should be thankful that you can possibly reach more people because of this. And yeah, I mean, maybe I should. Maybe I should be thankful that I'm reaching a whole new group of people who previously would not have seen my story. And it's the quiet ones. It's not the people that are loud. My husband and I just talked about this the other night, and it's like, yeah, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. It's the loud ones that get our attention. And we were talking about it in context of this. It's the people that are really loud and really angry that we tend to pay the most attention to and that tend to be catered to in some way, shape, or form. But it's the quiet ones that matter. And so if you're one of those people that's listening and you really have felt seen, heard, healed, educated, you've changed your mind, anything from listening to us, we are so, so thankful that you're here. And I've gotten messages from several of you talking about how impactful our podcast is. And we save all of those. Like, oh, totally. We screenshot them, we send them back and forth, and we have folders with all of these little accolades, because it's not easy to be here doing this all the time. We may make it look easy, and I think a lot of days it is relatively easy for us, but sometimes it's not. And sometimes, just like we're getting you through, you're getting us through. So just know it's mutual.
Right. Like, we love the feedback. Sometimes we cry about it, but mostly we love the feedback. And that's how I felt finishing up that speech for the prosecutors too, and getting those evaluations. I know everybody's been somewhere where they have to do an evaluation of a course or a speaker or a training or something. I read those and lovingly hold them against me, because all of the doubt that we fill ourselves with just as humans that are putting ourselves out there, those break those walls down little bit by little bit. And I don't care if you remember our names or our faces. We want you to remember, hopefully, that there's an impact to be made by sharing what's in your heart.
So it just reminds me of this quote that I'm sure many people have heard. It's from Maya Angelou, and it's, people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And I think when you hear this quote, you're probably thinking of someone who you may not remember what they said or what they did, but you remember how they made you feel. And so that's what you are to us. We are honored to be that to many of you. And I say it over and over again, like, if you've sent me a meaningful message about how I've helped you, you will probably have received a response that says something to the effect of, it's an honor to have been part of your journey. And that's exactly what I mean. It's an honor that you guys allow us to be part of your space and your education and your healing. Like, honor doesn't even begin to cover the way I feel about it. I don't know if there's a stronger, bigger word, but that's how I feel, truly.
It's our job to help you remember. We're not giving you strength. We're simply reminding you that it's already there, and for you to share even a piece of that, to have your heart and your mind open to receiving new information, like hopefully we are giving you. That's truly what we're here for. That's what we've made our entire job and our purpose.
Yes. So thank you. Love, hearts, squishy feelings. We love feelings.
Hopefully this episode makes it out and my sanity is still somewhat intact.
Send it to the editor.
Hash brown, send it to the internet.
Yes. Thank you for being patient with us and allowing us to re-record. And, you know, we're at the end of the day, we're just two a-holes with microphone and a little bit of talent.
Just a little bit of something.
Doing our best.
Small family business.
That's all I got.
Till next week, where we have an amazing couple of guests.
Yes. Yes. Yep, that's it.
Okay.
Segue. Clap, clap.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain.
If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show.
To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com.
Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later. Fucking fuck. I did it! I did not thumbs up you! You asshole!